This is the Improve Photography Podcast, episode number 114. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improve Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Harmer, and today I am joined by the entire Improve Photography family. We have Darren Meller on the line, Nick Page, Erica Kaufman, Jeff is on the line, and Brian is on the line. Everybody, welcome. Jeff, I didn't say your last name because everybody is starting to get confused between Jeff Harmon and Jim Harmer. I've seen a few people that said, you sound different on the podcast, Jim. It's getting funny. So everybody, welcome to the podcast. We have huge changes coming to Improve Photography. We're probably 1 week out from three new podcasts hitting your feed. So be checking for Improve Photography. We're going to have new shows popping up. I'm going to set up an easy link for everybody at improvephotography.com/podcast. Just go to improvephotography.com/podcast, and I'm going to have a special link there that will have that just all in one page. You can just click subscribe, 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 and you'll be on the new shows. Now, the reason that we're making these shows is because we want them to apply to all the little niches and the preferences of everybody in photography. So if you don't want to listen to all of them, don't worry. We're still friends, even if it means you're unsubscribing from me and you go to Darren's show or you go to Jeff's show or whatever else. You know, we're still friends. The idea is we want to make sure that we're meeting your needs and learning photography the way that you want to. So try the shows, listen to them for a few weeks, and I'm sure you're going to find some really cool stuff. So that's at improvephotography.com/podcast. Everything all in one spot for you. Well, there were some big news that happened in photography this week. Some really interesting stories that happened. The first one is is from LA. This is as reported in Petapixel. The city of LA paid a $50,000 settlement to a few photographers who had been detained, meaning they were basically arrested, for doing photography in you know, really benign situations. They weren't doing anything wrong. They weren't getting in the way of police. They were just photographing police or photographing buildings, and the police wondered if they were terrorists and stuff. Times that the photographers should not have been stopped, but was. And so it's really, really a sad story, but I'm glad to see that the city is finally paying and showing the respect to photographers. Jeff Harmon, what did you think about this story?
It seems like it's about time. I think, I respect the law enforcement officials. I'm really glad they're out there protecting us all. But it seems like they frequently don't know whether or not you should be allowed to do photography in areas. It seems like they harass the photographers a lot more than they should be. Like there's a legal right to be there in a lot of public places. And I've heard some photographers talk about how if it's an actual police officer and they're asking you to stop, then they'll comply just rather than cause a problem. And even if they ask to erase the card, erase the images, then they'd even do that because you can go back after, as long as you don't write more photos to that same card, you can go back on the computer and restore all the files. So you can get them all back. But and so they'll comply. They'll be nice because you're not there to cause a problem. But if it's more of like a security guard, someone who's not a police officer, then, you know, they feel like they can talk to them a little more about it. Say, no, I have a right to be here. It's okay for me to be here right now, and push it a bit more. You may even bring it up with the officer. Say, I thought I had a right to be able to be here, but don't push it too far.
I disagree with that. As an attorney and one who's I've done a lot of work with police officers, I totally disagree with this. I think you need to stand up for your rights. I think you're part of the problem if you're just like, okay, whatever, I'll delete all my photos every time. I'm not okay with that. That requires a warrant for a police officer to even look at your photos. That's a search. And so I'm not okay with that. They cannot even ask to look at your camera if they don't have a search warrant. And so I'm totally not okay with that. I think photographers need to stand up for the right. You should not be belligerent to a police officer. They have a hard enough job and they don't need a bunch of boneheads out there. but I believe you're causing harm to the photography industry as a whole if you're just bowing to this. It's these photographers who made a stand for it, and now the police in LA are going to learn, you know, a little bit of the law on how that works.
Yeah, that part.
Don't be belligerent, but I think you do need to stand up for your rights.
That part was really interesting. That they're going to train all of them now to say, look, it's their right. They can be out there. I don't know if it's going to be very effective because it's through a newsletter.
Yeah, that's what I saw. They're going to train all the photographers, all the police with a newsletter. I think
part of the problem is a lot of photographers don't know what their rights are with it. You know, whether or not certain public areas are okay to shoot at or not. I know, you know, some places have their laws with like tripods being on their grounds, but being out in public, walking down the sidewalk, I was doing a shoot the other day and found this beautiful colored building and took a couple up there, and a security guard came up to me and said I wasn't allowed to be photographing there. And it turns out it was a federal building that I didn't know about. So therefore, because it was federal, I wasn't allowed to be shooting there. Oh. So I think a lot of photographers just don't know where can we and what are our rights.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And this becomes a much bigger issue when you're in a different country and you don't understand how their laws work. You know, when I go to another country, if a cop ever stops me, it's like, yes, sir, do whatever you want. Just don't kill me, because I don't know how their laws work. And so there's no way I'm going to push the issue. In the United States, I feel pretty comfortable with that. And so, again, I'm going to be respectful and never belligerent with a cop. But I am going to stand up for the rights that I have. So general rule in the United States, if you're in a public place, you're okay. If you feel like if you're in a place that a police officer would restrict where you are, you know, you're on the grounds of the federal courthouse. Anybody knows there are a little bit different issues. We're at a courthouse, right? Then, you know, we're going to have to watch out. We may have a little bit of a different rule. If you're in a place where you've paid to enter, then there are going to be different rules. Whoever owns that place can control what happens, because they're, you know, you've paid to enter that place. But if you're just in a public area, you can shoot. I mean, you're going to be just fine. Anyway, we can get into that a lot more. Erica, a question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, if a photographer is out shooting somewhere and they are stopped by the police, what would you, Jim, as somebody with a law background, suggest that the photographer says to the police in order to kind of defend their rights and defend their, you know, ability to be shooting in that place?
Most police officers are really nice, and they got way bigger fish to fry than a portrait photographer in the park, right? And so if you're just respectful and you just explain, hey, I'm just taking a portrait. I don't want to get anybody's way. I don't want to impede traffic on the alleyway or anything like that. We're just taking a picture here, and that's what we're going to do. And most of the time, they're going to be fine. Every once in a while, you get a cop that's on a serious power trip. And we've all met the police officers that are just on a crazy power trip. And I have too, even with photography. And in that case, I probably would put my foot down to say, you know, I'm in a public place. I'm not impeding traffic. I'm not hurting anybody. I do have the right to take pictures here. I'd like to talk to your supervisor about it. They'll call a supervisor, and maybe you'll get somebody who's not quite a hothead, and you'll be okay to just explain it.
I kind of want to see that, Jim, because when I've been around you, you're so laid back and relaxed. I can't picture you standing up for yourself to a cop like that.
Well, no. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because I feel comfortable with the law. But there have been a couple times where that's happened. One, I was photographing in a park in Florida. There was a youth baseball game or something going on, and I was practicing focus techniques. I was just shooting in the park with my wife, and kids were there. And one of the parents thought I was, you know, taking pictures, creepy pictures of the kids, and called the police. And that's not illegal. I wouldn't walk around the playground and take pictures of kids because that's just creepy. But this is a public sporting event. There were probably 100 people watching this game. And so I have every right to take a picture of it. It wasn't like it was a private league. This was a city league, just playing in a public park. I have every right to take that picture. And if you can just explain that to a police officer, there's just nothing wrong with that. All right, the next story is about the shutter. This is something that I see people concerned about a lot. That, you know, you get the camera and you look at the specs and you're like, oh man, the shutter count is only 200,000 or whatever it is. So Darren, I want to hear what you think about this. There's a story on Photo Focus about the cost of what it actually costs to take a picture and the shutter. Darren, do you worry about the shutter count on your camera and burning out your shutter?
No, actually, I don't at all. I think I'd rather take some bad shots and get the good shots and kind of waste those shutter actuations versus not getting the shot at all because I'm worried about, you know, my shutter flipping too many times and having it die on me. That's probably in the back of my mind.
Have you ever burned out a shutter?
Never.
Has anybody burned out a shutter?
I have not.
although I have to say the shutter on my 5D Mark III is starting to sound a little bit springy, which probably isn't the best sound in the world, but I'm starting to worry a little bit about the shutter on my 5D Mark III, so I might be getting close to that.
Do you know what your count is, Nick?
No, I don't. I got the number probably, I don't know, 6 months ago, so it's got to be approaching 175,000, something like that.
Okay. I've never burned out a shutter. Maybe because I usually don't keep cameras real long. I don't know if I've ever kept a camera more than 2 years.
Did you drop it in the water too much?
Yeah,
you
right. It's not that I haven't kept them that long. It's that they haven't lasted that long.
Right.
You kill it before it can die.
That's right. It's just so rare that I talk to a photographer that says the shutter has worn out. And when it does happen, it's not that expensive to just replace the shutter. Numbers that I've seen from guys that have had to do it, around $200-$250 to replace a shutter and a camera. So it's not really something that you have to worry about that much. Brian, what do you think of this?
I've never had issues with it. I think I'm kind of similar to you, to where I don't keep a body long enough. I usually tend to trade it in and get a new one.
And Erica, do you keep your cameras a long time?
No, I don't. I'm the same as you guys. I like to get the new stuff when it comes out every couple of years. So I've never had to deal with a shutter going out.
I haven't either. And Nick, what about you?
You know, the main time that I worry about it is I shoot a lot of time lapse. And I think a person can burn through a whole lot of shutter shutter count.
Actuations.
Yeah, I have a golden tongue today. When you're doing a lot of time lapse, you end up just taking a ton and ton of photos. So I shoot a lot of time lapse, and that's where I worry that I'm burning through my shutter. So I try to keep that for the backup cameras, the ones that are not quite as expensive. But I didn't realize that replacing the shutter was that cheap.
Yeah, it's really not expensive at all. And if you do the math, let's say you take a time lapse that takes 1,000 pictures. That would actually be a pretty long time lapse to go to 1,000 pictures. And then we say a shutter replacement is about $250. Then, and we get 150,000 shots. That means that our time lapse cost us 3 cents. It's just not expensive. So this is just not something for photographers to worry about. You could just fire. And most of the time, you know, your shutter is going to go way over the number of actuations that it's actually warranted for. The reason they put that on the warranty is they want to make sure they're not going to have to pay for shutters. And so even seeing a large number of cameras, they're pretty sure that it isn't going to wear out at that point. So I think not to worry here. Darren, you posted a story from Petapixel about shooting on railroad tracks. Man, this was a sad story. Tell us about it.
Yeah, there was a camera crew member. She was actually on the railroad tracks. She got hit by the train. The crew barely got off the tracks, and there's a video of it. I definitely warn people, if we link over to it, to just watch it with some caution. They don't show anything bad, but it's still someone losing their life, and they were shooting there. They blamed it on miscommunication with being permissible to be on the railroad track. And still, even if I had permission to be on the railroad track, I don't think I would still be on there unless I had authorized railroad personnel that was in contact with dispatch at all the time while I was on that track. I mean, people will step on tracks all throughout the year, think that they're abandoned, get hit by trains, have limbs torn off and things like that. And coming from a family where steel runs in my blood, coming from different generations of railroaders, it just infuriates me to see pictures on railroad tracks. It conveys the message to everyone, it's okay to shoot on railroad tracks, but it's not. It's illegal. And my dad has actually seen Union Pacific Railroad's police department, their internal police department, prosecute people if they have pictures on railroad tracks, if they recognize that as part of the, of their railroad line. So it's also illegal as well.
Darren, steel does pump through your veins because the last time we were together in Oregon, you came in and you had a little cut on your hand. And I said, what happened to your hand, Darren? And he says, oh, man, the testosterone was pumping this morning and I just punched my can of protein shake and open it. He just punches the metal can and it cut his hand. He was feeling that manly.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And then in the Redwoods, Jim comes up to me with a cut up knuckle and I said, so did you punch a protein can? And he goes, no.
The scary thing about shooting on railroad tracks is everybody thinks if there's a train coming, I'm going to get off the tracks. You know, it's just, it doesn't seem like it's ever a danger, but a lot of people die every year on railroad tracks. And here's an example where it's a photographer. I'm sure every person there felt very comfortable saying, if a train starts coming, we're going to hear it from a long ways off and we'll step off the tracks. But people die every year doing this. So you got to be careful. The photographer who was in charge of this shoot now, the director, is going to spend the next 2 years in jail and 8 years on probation because of a simple shoot. I'm sure he didn't think was dangerous. I'm sure he couldn't have even imagined could kill anybody, but it did happen, and he's the one responsible for it. Pretty sad. Jeff, you were talking about getting some long exposure night shots with head and tail lights. Tell me about that.
Well, just this made me think of I'm not too tempted to go get on the railroad tracks. Maybe I haven't seen the right set yet, but I'm not too tempted by that. But I am very tempted with, you know, we're in this desert scene I'm in Utah here, and there's some really great like mountain sunset scenes, and it seems like it'd be really fun to go find a nice busy road with where I can get on the median and do a long exposure and get those taillights and headlights. Making the trails on the long exposure with the sunset background or whatever it might be. I've thought that would be a fun shot to get, but it made me wonder, that might be way too dangerous. Similar to how the trains are, cars are worse, obviously, to as far as speed goes and how dangerous that could be. So has anyone tried anything like that? Are you being able to be safe doing something like that?
You're just on the road taking long exposures,
or maybe in a median. If there's it's like a, you know, two 4-lane road to each direction, and there's a median.
Oh yeah, I've seen that too, where you know the tracks of the long exposure are going on either side of you.
Yeah.
I've never done that myself, but I have shot along a lot of. No, that's not true. In fact, I did do that in a median once in Florida. Often to get to those medians, you have a crosswalk. And so you can go in the crosswalk and then just stop halfway and you're in the median. I don't really see cars very often driving on the median. And so, I don't know. Yeah. To me, it's okay. If I were leading a group of people, I probably wouldn't do that. But if it's just me shooting and I got a crosswalk to get there, I would say that was probably safe. What do you think, Nick?
Kind of depends on the speed limit. I did it just like on the main street here in my local small sleepy little town here. It was in the middle of a lightning storm, which looking back might have been a really bad choice because people are going to be looking at the sky, not at the road. But I just stood directly in the middle and just like waved cars on away around me, and they're going slow enough because the speed limit's only 25. But in hindsight, it's very conceivable that somebody would have been distracted staring at the sky instead of me, and I could have got hit. But I figured, you know, 25 miles an hour, it wouldn't hurt too bad.
Yeah. Well, some interesting news stories happening this week. But in our main segment, we want to talk about 5 embarrassing photography mistakes coming from each one of us. Some things that we've done as we're learning photography that now we can look back on and we can see the we can see the errors that we're making in an effort, hopefully, to help you to recognize some of the things that may be happening in your own photography that maybe you can avoid by learning some of these. Eric, I want to start with you. Tell me one of the mistakes that you've made.
Oh, man. This was back in the day, and it was a pretty big mistake. I got way too carried away in editing my portraits. I am a portrait photographer, so most of the things that I'm photographing and editing are people. And when I first started doing this, I thought it would be a great idea to completely smooth skin and completely sharpen eyes and whiten the white areas of people's eyes. And
oh, that's really creepy.
Yeah,
you see,
I know.
A picture that has the whites whitened just a little bit too much.
Nuclear.
Right. Oh yeah. I know now. You know, back then I thought I was just, you know, being really awesome and you know, I was awesome at Photoshop and I was making all these people look so beautiful. And I know now that that's not necessarily the case. It's definitely less is more when it comes to editing people, editing their skin, their eyes, their teeth, whatever it is. And I now do not edit like that. But that was something that I got some critique from. And Jim, actually, I think it was a portfolio review with you a really long time ago in one of your courses. And you were like, you might want to watch the eyes a little bit. They're a little too white there on the edges. So thanks for that tip.
Well, that's good to hear. That's amazing to hear, actually, because now you're a way better portrait photographer than I ever have been. Seriously, you got to go look at Erica's work. The portrait you took of the couple under the tree looking through the leaf, that's one I've thought about that since you showed me that photo. It is so cool. So we got to put that one in the show notes. That was an awesome shot.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, another thing that can really help when you're facing this, when you're just not sure if it's too much, is to edit it and leave it. Do not look at it. Do not think about it for a day or two, and then come back and look at it with fresh eyes. And whoa, you'll see your mistakes that way. Eventually, once you've gone through enough photos and you kind of learned what's too much and what's not enough, you're eventually going to be able to hone down on it. But nobody is good at this in the beginning. It definitely takes some time to develop that eye for just the right amount of post-processing. Just like when you see somebody doing their makeup. You know, it, like a little girl doing their makeup for the first time, it's going to be wild, right? It's going to be crazy. And then over time, you get a little bit better at it. Jeff, how about you?
You know, very similar, and probably as the hobbyist beginner photographer of the group here, I'm probably making the mistakes you all have been through before. And but I have seen a lot of the issues in my editing too. So like HDR, you know, I'm a fan of it in certain degrees, although a lot lately I haven't even needed it. So maybe that's a beginner crutch that I'm kind of getting over. But I didn't deghost things, so that's where in the between the different shots you have, the plants will move, the wind will move the tree leaves a little bit, or the vegetation that's out in the field, and so the photo ends up looking like you've got these blurry leaves and plants out there. It's just not good. And then there's over sharpening. I've done that way too much, and boy, is it looks so terrible when you've over sharpened a scene or a portrait. But I think really the one I'm struggling the most with right now is noise reduction. Where's the right spot to do noise reduction? My Pixoto photo that is the very highest rated ever is one that has like a huge amount of noise in it. It's a night star shot with a camping tent out in it that's got a flashlight inside it. And it's kind of a cool shot, but boy, is there a ton of noise and people don't seem to care at all. So I've got to dial in a little better, I think, how much noise reduction I add to the shots.
We want to get to all these photography mistakes, but that's a great question, Jeff. Let's go through everybody. For me personally, I don't use noise reduction at all. None. I do no noise reduction because I would rather have the noisy shot than just, I know the tools are getting better and better with noise reduction, and I've tried a lot of them, but I just can't stand that we're losing sharpness. every once in a while I try it and I'm like, well, wait, what if I just put a little noise reduction in this part of the photo? And it just still drives me nuts. I would rather just have the noise. Nick, how about you? Do you use noise reduction?
When I do noise reduction, I'm pretty much only using it in the adjustment brush. Like I'll just brush it into just the darkest parts of the shadows where I don't really want there to be detail anyways. Sometimes I'll do it on my night sky shots just because it's kind of a creative choice with the way it makes the stars and stuff look. But if I do use it, I'm only using it locally in the adjustment brush.
Erica, how about you?
I'm the same as Nick. I don't use it very often, but when I do, it's with the brush. Typically, I like a little bit of grain. My style is a little grainy, so it doesn't bother me. But if I do feel like it's a little much, then I will use the brush to just, you know, touch up little spots here and there.
Okay. And Brian?
Sometimes for some of my landscape shots, I will allow, like, maybe it's defeating the purpose, but I'll sharpen the image a little bit in Lightroom, and then I'll play with the luminous to just kind of sometimes give it like a smooth, if I want like a painting type look to it, I guess. But for the most part, no. Normally I don't.
Okay. And how about Darren?
I actually switched to not using long exposure noise reduction in camera after talking to one of our night photographers on the show, Mark Gee. And I do use it a little bit inside Lightroom, but I'm trying to back off of using it because I actually want to send a family portrait session or couple that I did photos for redos of their photos because I actually increased the luminance noise slider to where I went back and said, there's no way I shot that. That looks horrible. And then I reduced the noise slider and it came back and it looked much nicer.
Yeah, that was a great tip that Mark gave on the podcast, and it validated something that I'd thought for a long time. I actually did a test a couple of years ago with long exposure noise reduction turned on the camera and then without it. And it made zero noise or zero difference. I mean, none. Absolutely no difference. And I've been telling people that for years, and people laugh at me. And I've heard people tell me, no, it makes a big difference, even professional photographers. And then after Mark explained that about it only makes a difference if you're using the Canon or Nikon software to get the advantage out of it. Excuse me. And nobody is. Finally, it validated. So. Good point there. So, Jeff, I guess now that we've made the rounds, does that change at all how you might approach noise reduction in your photos?
Well, I do think I still have to try to figure out what my balance is going to be. But you guys can do need to remember you got the high end gear, the nice professional glass. If you don't have that stuff, the noise is a much bigger problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I have to figure it out. I don't have really good glass yet. I'm still in the more of the crop sensor glass category. And boy, especially the color noise in particular, mm-hmm. that can get pretty bad with those lenses. Mm-hmm.
Good point. Well, Brian, tell us about your mistake. Your
Which
embarrassing
one?
Photography mistake.
You know, I do after school program with some kids, and I always tell them the number one tip is take off the lens cap. And after I tell them that, I still leave it on. A lot of times when I shoot an NFL game, you know, you've got to be on your toes, you've got to pay attention. And there's been a few times where I've almost been ran over, and I can tell
all our listeners in the UK right now are like, a what game?
American football. Sorry. And I can always tell because my phone will start going off like crazy where people will be teasing me. Hey, you almost got ran over there. But I think the biggest, you know, forehead slap was I was standing the Colts-Patriots game this past year. I'm on the sideline talking to the Colts photographer. And, you know, the time's coming down and the game's pretty much over. I just got lost in our conversation. And all of a sudden, you know, there's 15 seconds left in the game, but everyone started to come onto the field. And, you know, that's when all the photographers rush on to the center and they get the pictures of the quarterback shaking hands. And so I'm like, oh, I got my wrong camera. So I had to go up and put down my huge lens and grab my other camera body. And I run out and I've got my camera up high over Luck and Brady shaking hands. And it's, you know, going like crazy. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm walking away. Black.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what happened? And then I looked. The lens cap was on.
Oh.
So that was frustrating. Luckily, I got some other shots that kind of redeemed it. But yeah, taking off the lens cap, you supposedly you need to do that.
It'd be great if you had a shot that somebody else got of you with your camera raised up, lens cap on.
You know what? I actually looked. I actually searched for that the next day to see. I'm like, please don't show that. Please don't show that.
Yeah, you're going to be on SportsCenter on the fail photographer.
Exactly. <That's right>. Just working it.
Oh. Yeah, somebody suggested the other day, somebody said, why don't they make professional DSLRs that have the little string to the lens cap like they do on cheaper cameras that, you know, have a string at the end of the lens that you can, you know, have the lens cap swinging. I was like, No. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants the lens cap swinging. I've given up lens caps. I don't think I even have one anymore. I just stick the lens in the bag and keep the lens hood on. And I have never, ever scratched a lens. It's a beautiful thing. I'm telling you, people, give up on your lens caps.
This is also from the guy that goes through camera bodies like nobody's business.
Camera bodies, but I my lenses are pristine. They're looking good.
How many functional LCD screens do you have right now?
Darren, how about you?
Well, mine involves the lens caps as well, but it actually resulted in a good thing. I was actually in a district called the Old Market in Omaha, Nebraska, and there's this couple standing there, and we're walking in from Scott Kelby's photo walk, and we all know what happened on that day with me. But regardless, we're walking in with all of our camera gear, and these people are like, are you guys professional photographers? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty awesome. And they're like, who would you recommend for a wedding? And I'd be like, me? And then I said, let me shoot a shot of you, and I'll send it to you via email. And then the first thing I forgot... lens cap, of course, and then I went to go take the shot. Camera wasn't powered on. And then, luckily, they still trusted me to do their wedding here over Labor Day weekend, so I must have charmed them. So that's
maybe
the thing that happened.
Maybe they had pity on you.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, good. Well, you know, I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way. One of the biggest mistakes that I made that really had me sweating bullets is the first time one of my first serious gigs, I was shooting a black tie, rich old dude kind of event in Florida. You know, I was earning a good amount of money from the shoot. It was like, you know, $1,500 or $2,000, something like that, for an evening shoot. And I thought, yes, I have made it as a photographer. And so knowing the shoot was coming up, I got a bunch of new gear. I got a new background. Because they requested a background and I ordered it and it came the day before the shoot and it was just hideous. I mean, absolutely. It's like those fifth grade yearbook backgrounds, the blue clouds things.
With the lasers.
It looked terrible. Terrible. I totally should have ordered way earlier, got something that would work so I'd have time to replace it, but I didn't. I also was working with a new lens and new flashes because it was my first big shoot. And so I was like, well, I'm going to reinvest some of the money I earn in gear to do this right. And the whole night I was just sweating bullets. I didn't know what to do. Problems kept arising. I couldn't sync the flash because I hadn't worked with this big a flash before. People with glasses, it would just reflect everywhere. And the president of the organization came to get his official portrait and he had glasses on. And I was just sitting there for like 10 minutes figuring out, how do I put these lights to not reflect off this guy's glasses? And, you know, you can't take it off because some people just look weird with their glasses off. And I just didn't know. I had no idea what to do. It was all because I had tried new gear when it really counted. Once you have a lot of reps in photography and you've tried a lot of different stuff, you'll know how to adjust to one or two different things. But when you have that big shoot coming up, don't change your whole process. The people hired you on your current portfolio. So don't feel like you have to go all crazy for the shoot or else you can just really, really mess it up. But fortunately, I was able to... I probably spent 3 hours in Photoshop trying to get the glare off the glasses, but I finally was able to do it. Well, it's been a great episode, but before we go, we always end with a doodad of the week. Let's go in reverse order. Nick, what's your doodad this week?
My doodad is the SMDV Speedbox. I brought it to the Oregon workshop. It's this little pop-up softbox designed for speed lights. What's so cool about it, it's a little bit on the spendy side. I think the 24-inch one goes for $150. But what's so cool about it is how fast it sets up and tears down. you literally just pop out the rings and it is set up. You slide your flash into the hot shoe, you're good to go. And then when you want to tear it down, you literally just hit a couple little tab things and it collapses instantly. Shove it in the bag and you're done. The light that comes out of it is fairly soft. I wish they made these things a little bit bigger. But the cool thing is that it's a hexagon shape. So the catch lights that it creates in eyes is roundish. It's not perfectly round, but it's roundish. And it creates a nice reflection in the eyes. And yeah, I've loved this thing. This is kind of my quick grab and go softbox for when I'm doing outside shoots.
Jeff, what do you have for us?
So mine is it's a hard drive. It's a four terabyte HGST brand hard drive. And the reason it's the pick was I did an article on Improved Photography about hard drives and some statistics we have from a major vendor for online backup in the cloud. And in their study, what they found was the 3 terabyte version is significantly more prone to failure than the others. And I went and it made me go, look, I have my photos on a 3 terabyte hard drive. So I decided I better go do something about this. I don't want to lose my photos. So I got one this week, and that's just going to be my tip, that if you got a 3 terabyte drive, it's even if it's not going to fail, it's still safer to replace it and be proactive about it than not.
Very cool. Darren?
Yes, mine's actually a funny one because I like to throw in a little humor into the podcast. Mine was an article from Petapixel. It's a tip from a very well-renowned time-lapse photographer in the Middle East. He actually uses diapers and sanitary napkins to dry and dehumidify his lenses when working in wet environments. And I thought that this was a little bit funny. It starts out with a caveat saying, you know, if you find this a little bit unsavory to read, it's one of the best pieces of equipment out there, because they do have little silica packs that you can put inside your camera gear bags where your lenses are. But the problem with those is once those become saturated, you have to let them dry out and buy more of them. With sanitary napkins and diapers, they're a lot less expensive than these other devices. And even at, let's just say, you're Nick Page and you're out in the Pacific Ocean and you get your camera drowned, even if you're not seeing signs inside your weather-sealed lens of any humidity or water buildup in there, even if you wrap that lens in a sanitary napkin after shooting, it'll actually possibly reduce the risk of getting those ugly spots we would have not seen when inspecting the lens after it got drenched.
An interesting tip. Jeff? Oh, sorry, we already went to Jeff. Brian, what do you have?
I would say any Polaroid camera. You know, it's fun. It's instant fun to be able to take a shot and have it print off on a little piece of film. Kids see pictures on the back of their phones or iPods and everything all the time. But if you give them, you know, a cheap Polaroid camera and the print comes off, just the excitement of waiting, you know, being forced to wait to see what it looks like. I got one recently and my kids have played with it and some other kids have as well. And it's fun, you know, and you can even use them on shoots where you do it to take a photo of a couple and then the couple can hold the picture, you know, towards you when you do another photo of them with it. And it's just fun.
Yeah, very cool. And mine is also just one of those kind of fun ones. And this is the Olo Clip 4-in-1 lens for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. I'm very sad that I can't use it, but I have tried these lenses and they're really cool. They're just tiny little fingernail-sized lenses that you can use with your cell phone. Now, this one is for the iPhone, but they also make it for other cell phones as well, and Android has lots of lenses out for their cameras as well. But these tiny little fingernail lenses that easily fit in your pocket or even a side pocket in your camera bag when you're traveling around, it's pretty fun to be able to do something a little bit different. You know, is it going to be publishable work? Maybe, but it's pretty fun. And if you use your cell phone camera a lot, this is definitely a buy. I can't use them, though, because I have a waterproof case on my phone and it's just too giant to fit any lenses on. But if you use a slim kind of case, these lenses are really, really cool. Well, thank you everybody for joining us on this episode of the Improved Photography Podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.